Hello, and welcome to the Vicar's Watch Dibley,
the podcast where real priests talk about pop culture and what we've learnt about life in the church. We watched Dibley, and now we're watching everything else. I'm Kate.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Ruthie, and today we're talking about Beetlejuice, the musical, with its themes of death and dying and grief. We talk about how we deal with grief in our own lives and how we manage it as priests.
Well, a holy happy hello to you all.
Hello.
Hello.
We're in our vicarages and you're listening in. We're ready and raring to talk about Beetlejuice the musical. But first, we've got some notices. Ruthie, I think you are the only one with a notice today. What's going on?
Well, we couldn't really think of notices, but then if we're basing this on Church of England churches, there's always notices, even if it's unnecessary. So my notice is I'm about to move house, which is very exciting. Ooh. By the time this comes out, I will have moved house, and I think I will have been licensed by this point as well. But we are recording quite far in advance because my house is chaos and trying to sort out packing boxes and moving firms, and I spent over 3 hours on the phone the other day just trying to sort out Wi-Fi with two different companies and having to wait on hold for 40 minutes to cancel a contract I had already cancelled. So the guy, when I was on the hold for 40 minutes, when he answered, he said, "I'm really sorry, I'm not sure why you've been on hold for all this time because you've already done this." I was like, "I know!"
That's awful.
So I'm full of moving rage, but also quite excited because my decorators sent in photos of our hallway looking beautiful and green. So that's good.
And Ruthie, what does moving house look like when you're a vicar, and how is it different to when you're not a vicar?
So the house kind of comes as part of the job as well. That's it. So to start a new vicar job, you will pretty much 98% of the time, if not 99%, have to move house as part of it. So the house is kind of, it's your home, but it's also a working space. I think there's, well, it might be written, but an unwritten rule that your house is a workspace that's used for parish things as part of that as well. And that's what I've grown up doing with that anyway. So I've got a study space, but I've also got a lovely big lounge, which I'm sure we'll have meetings in and things like that. But the diocese, so the kind of big group of area of churches, they pay for us to move, so that's really helpful. So I'm not having to try and pack boxes with toddler and dog and make sure that toddler doesn't try and pack dog in box or anything like that. Actually, it might be the other way around. Our dog might try and pack the toddler in a box just to get him out the way for a bit. Yeah, so that's what we're doing as part of it with the new job. So it's all a big learning curve, and we're moving to a different area and going from living in a town/city to living in a hamlet, which is a very small village. I think technically I'm going to be in a hamlet, so no corner shop for a 10 o'clock beer run if needed or anything like that.
You're going to have to be organised with your beer.
I know. Yeah, so and it's going to feel very different. Mm. So looking forward to it, but also a bit like, I'm swamped under paperwork and moving everyone. But we'll get there. Maybe I'll do some pictures on Instagram. Maybe I have already done pictures on Instagram of moving, so you can have a little insight into how it all looks. But it's exciting.
Well, blessings abundant upon you and your family as you prepare to move house, Ruthie.
I know, yeah. I'll need them. It's going to take a week. They've not got enough people. So they're going to pack for 3 days and move us in for 2 days. So it's a lot.
And are you going to be inside camping in your new home?
No. Do you know what's really lovely? Is that my dad and my mum have organised an Airbnb for us all the night before it, all the boxes come in, because we were going to be indoor camping in our new house, But they just said, you know what, with all the stress of moving, let's just get an actual bed for you all. So that's what we're doing, which will be nice. Oh, really thank goodness. Nice. Yeah. But yeah, it's good. Yeah. It's good. It will be fine.
It will be fine. Now, you alluded to the fact that about when this episode will come out. And if I remember correctly, it's going to be coming out around spooky season.
Ooh, spooky season.
And we have something of a Halloween special, I suppose. All Hallows Eve special. As we delve today into Beetlejuice the musical. Now, dear listeners, I want to give you just a little bit of a heads up / content warning. We are going to be talking a little bit around the subjects of grief and death. There will be the musical itself tackles some suicide ideation and is also a bit raunchy in places.
What a combo!
My goodness, that's a strange way for that content warning to end, really. But do look after yourselves, my dears. Mm. If you are currently mourning find yourselves to be upset easily by these kind of things, then please do just check in with yourself.
Well said.
Mm. With that said, Caitlin.
This is your fault that we listened to this.
Yes. So.
Tell us about Beetlejuice the musical. Why this musical? Yes, and what have you learned from it? Over to you.
People who know me quite well won't be too surprised that I like Beetlejuice. And particularly love Beetlejuice the musical because I like musicals and I had a bit of a, I wouldn't say a full gothy phase as a teenager, but I definitely hung out with that crowd and enjoyed all the usual things.
Did you ever dye your hair black?
I didn't dye my hair black. Okay. No. Oh. I did have quite a sweeping side part for a bit, though. So, you know, had the emo fringe. But, so, I suggested that we listen to at least parts of a Beetlejuice musical today, because when I first listened to it, I thought, wow, this musical is about grief. And not only is it about grief, but it really rings true to the things that I observe and I try to speak to in funerals ministry. Before we get into that, though, I just want to explain what is Beetlejuice the musical. Beetlejuice the musical is based on the film from the 80s, from 1988, starring Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice, Winona Ryder as Lydia, Gina Davis, and Alec Baldwin. I hadn't realised Alec Baldwin was in this movie. Catherine O'Hara and Jeffrey Jones, and a few others. And I watched this again yesterday because I thought, you know, I haven't actually watched it for a while. Directed by Tim Burton, and so has everything that you would expect from a Tim Burton production, including stop-motion animation, interesting, weird visuals, and all of that. So the musical was first performed on Broadway in 2020. I think it kind of really started in 2019. And it's become a bit of a cult musical. It is a reworking of Beetlejuice, where it has the same elements. So Beetlejuice is a demon who, in order to be released, you have to say his name 3 times. So shall we just get that out of the way, so that we're not worrying about that, because we're not going to summon him. But here we go. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. He's not here. That's good.
Kate, there's someone behind you.
Michael Keaton.
So, and he is a very gross, disgusting character. And he encounters 2 recently deceased people, a couple, the Maitlands, who then find a new family moving into their house and they want to get rid of this new family. And there is a gothy teen called Lydia, who is the only one who can see them. And then shenanigans ensue. The musical in particular takes the character of Lydia and brings her to the front, whereas the movie is more about, I would say, the Maitlands. The musical is much more about Lydia herself, and we find out at the start of the musical that she has recently been bereaved, that her mum has passed away. And in fact, the opening song is all about her experience of losing her mum. And she sings, I think even the opening line is, "You're invisible when you're sad." And then a common refrain that then comes through the rest of the musical and many of the songs is the phrase, say my name or say your name. And she's really trying not only to get her dad to say her name, to get her dad to say her mum's name, but then Beetlejuice as well as a character always also talks about not being seen and feeling invisible. And of course you have to say his name for him to appear. So that's Beetlejuice the musical. And I suggested that you listen to that very first opening song, Invisible. And then a couple songs later, there's Lydia's next song, which is called Dead Mom. So what did you think about it?
I have never, ever seen Beetlejuice, and I still haven't seen Beetlejuice. I did want to try and see it before, but I haven't managed it, you know, just the small thing of moving and all that kind of stuff. I never watched it, I think because I'm not a horror person at all. And I think I was probably dissuaded from watching it by parents or things like that and going, actually, no, if that's a demon, we don't watch demons and all this kind of thing. So I'd never seen it. So I haven't watched the film. I haven't seen the musical. I've seen some clips and stuff online. Mm. So I only read the synopsis and listened to the songs. And so I've got a bit more of a patchy story in my head than others. So hopefully, if you've never seen Beetlejuice either, I can be your guide through this and go, I can ask the questions that don't make sense to me. I like the style of music as part of it, the musical. I thought it was really cool and jazzy. And the repetition of Say My Name, although I wanted to say... sing Beyonce for Beyonce Destiny's Child, is it?
Yeah.
Say my name. Yeah. That kept cropping into my head every time I heard it. But there's some really powerful lyrics in there that get slightly hidden in the kind of goofiness of all that's going on. I've been really, I'm curious about it. Maybe I will watch Beetlejuice at some point in the future. I will be brave.
And maybe at some point we'll talk about, as Christians, can you engage with things which are about demons and ghosts and evil? But we won't talk about that today.
Not today. Have you seen it before, Ross?
I've seen the film, yes. Long time ago. And I found it quite creepy. I don't think... I mean, it's one of those films which isn't really horror, but it is creepy in a kind of surreal way. I think I was a young adult when I watched it rather than a child. There's a scene at the dinner table especially, which is just a bit creepy. And I guess that's where you kind of got possession kind of stuff going on. And it's kind of comedy. And you've got some great improvisers, like, you know, Catherine O'Hara, who many of you may know as Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek. Some brilliant performances, but I remember being a bit creeped out by it. Really enjoyed listening to the musical. I think my favourite song was Say My Name. It was a bit of a sort of patter song. I just thought the whole concept of the song was really fun.
Yeah, I think my favourite song is actually probably the whole Being Dead thing, which is the second song of the musical. It's Beetlejuice's introduction. And what I like about it is that it kind of says, you know, we're going to be talking about death and we're not going to be scared to talk about death in this show. And in order to make the audience comfortable with that, there's an awful lot of comedy thrown in there and really irreverent humour. Like, it kind of says, you're like, no one is safe from this
point. It really breaks
on
that fourth wall.
Beetlejuice talks directly to the audience. There's lots of jokes. And I think from the kind of filmed kind of TV show appearances I've seen, they do change it slightly depending where it's being performed and who's there. I don't know, there's just something that really caught my imagination when I first heard it, in terms of having that center stage at a funeral as a priest. That's what you're doing, is you're holding things together and you are talking about death with people. And I just felt a really interesting interplay as I was reflecting on what I'm doing compared to what Beetlejuice does, which is cause complete chaos.
I wonder if there is something, you know, we could see priests at a funeral, or indeed readers and lay ministers who are allowed to do funerals as well, whether we are breaking the fourth wall of people's grief and kind of speaking some kind of truth that goes unsaid in so many people's either collective grief as a family or individual grief.
Yeah,
I like that. And what's interesting is Beetlejuice seems to take this role in the musical itself, or at least right at the start before things completely go to disaster. But actually, there is a priest right at the beginning of this musical.
What?
Yes.
For all of one line.
Our regular segment, is there a priest? Is there a vicar in this show? Caitlin.
Yes, there is a vicar in this show. And it begins, the vicar says, something on the lines of, I'm gathered here today to remember... oh my goodness, I can't forget...
I've got the lyrics here.
You got it here.
The pastor says... Mm. In times like these, we have no words, we have only each other. Today we come together to mourn the passing of Emily Dietz, devoted wife of Charles, beloved mother to Lydia. Scripture tells us, sorrow not, for we do not walk alone.
Except it doesn't.
Well, here we go. Another favourite segment of that we like here, Vicar's Watch Dibley.
Is it
scriptural?
It's not, I don't think.
What?
I did try to look, but I think what it does is it captures, I would say that it captures what Psalm 23 is about, and even
which
going
is...
walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because you are with me. But it has been reframed and reworded. So I think it rings true of scripture, but I don't think it's actually a direct scriptural quote.
Well, there's somebody on Reddit who also asked that very question. Has somebody responded, no, it's not actual scripture, but check out 1 Thessalonians 4:13. We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope.
But good old Reddit. Thank you, Reddit.
But there's something in there about the pastor is offering hope in the place of sorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's your job, isn't it?
Yeah.
When it comes to this.
And I think then that's, if you do get a chance to explore more of the story of the musical, the dramatic, the narrative progress is Lydia... trying to work out kind of what's happening now that I don't have my mum. Can I go and find my mum in the afterlife and bring her back? And then sort of coming to terms and being at peace with my mum's gone, but I've still got people all around me who love me. And then at the same time, you've got her dad, who in a very different way is presenting grief, where for him, instead of a very performative, emotional experience, he's closed up. If we look to the song Dead Mom, we find that Lydia is saying he wants me to move on, and he wants me to be happy, and he's just moving on ahead, and we, you know, learn in a musical that he has moved on romantically, and I think there's all, but then there, by the end of a musical, he has managed to connect emotionally with Lydia again and accept, his wife's passing and what that actually means for them moving forward. Which is interesting because grief, as I've observed, there is no single way to experience grief.
No.
And I think sometimes people feel like if I'm grieving, it has to look a specific way. And if I'm not acting like that, if I'm not presenting like that, then there must be something wrong with me. I must not have loved the person as much as I said I did.
Yeah. Is the is it the five stages of grief or something like that people talk about? Yes, there are those different stages that I think people go through in grief, but how they experience it is very different. Can look very different coming out. And I think I think we said this before, but actually as a society as a whole, we're not very good at talking about death. We're not very good at it. You know, in other cultures, they are much better at it. And we use kind of different terms. We talk about someone going to sleep or they've gone away or things like that. We don't just, you know, it wouldn't be a very British thing to say, oh, they're dead. You know, that's very final and you know, done. And we like to use different terms to soften it. But actually that means that we don't address it and talk about it properly in lots of ways. Mm. And so having a musical that just goes, you know what, we're talking about death. Mm. This is going to be a big thing. The whole thing is about death. Mm. Yeah, it's quite countercultural for kind of, well, British culture definitely and other cultures too.
So I'm going to ask you both a question, which may be far too personal. How do you grieve? What does grief look like for you two?
So for me, the largest bereavements I've experienced have been grandparents. And I think I become immobilised by grief. I just find it really hard to do anything. I feel quite depressed when someone I love passes away. And I have this memory of, you know, I'm someone who's very used to speaking at the front of church. I'm a vicar. I do it every Sunday. when my dad's father passed away, and I was training for ministry at this point, and it was actually just a few months before I was actually ordained, I was asked to do a reading from Revelations, one which we'll all be very familiar with, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And I got about halfway through and was suddenly overcome by emotion and really struggled to get the words out. And that's me as someone who's incredibly used to speaking in front of church, used to speaking in front of large groups of people, used to holding things together, actually, in that context. But I became quite overwhelmed.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm. I think I'm a fixer in grief, that I will want to just sort things out and go, right, okay, practically, what do we need to do? What can we do to help? You know, this thing. And so I think I can seem quite cold, perhaps, to grief. funny story. I don't know. Were you there in Death and Dying week when I did it? No.
No, we were the year below.
Because you were the year before, weren't you? Yeah.
And in fact, I think I was excused from Death and Dying because I had been so recently bereaved because
I'm
really
bad
as well.
So Death and Dying Week, we had
We should just say, when we were at college,
in Death and Dying Week.
Yeah. So when we were training, we had a 2-week intensive course on the subject of death, dying, and resurrection hope. They added that last one for our year. Maybe not for yours, Ruthie.
Got hope.
Because they realised that just calling it Death and Dying Week got a bit grim, so let's add in Resurrection Hope, because that's kind of what Christianity is all about, right?
Yeah.
So when we talk about Death and Dying Week, we're talking about our training all together at Cranmer Hall.
Yeah, which is where we kind of learnt how to do funerals and how to help people who are bereaved or at the end of life or all these different things. And someone came in who did, who was a counsellor for children who were experiencing grief and death and how to help them through that and this kind of thing, and offered like examples of books that were helpful and all this stuff. And she gave this example about having a child that if they've had a parent who's died or something like that, perhaps they might want to sleep with a parent's T-shirt for the smell and things like that. And I asked a question about, you'll understand why I'm giggling in a moment. I asked a question about, you know, that's a really good idea. If that kid's still holding onto this T-shirt in like 4 years' time, how do we help them move on from it? And this woman was like, I'm not sure I would help them. I think that's fine if they're there. So I was suddenly painted as this cold-hearted cow. Like, well, It's time to move over. Move on. Get over it. You know, they're not coming back. Crack on. You've got your GCSEs to do. Which I didn't think I was, but it is a joke that keeps getting mentioned and people do remind me of. Do you remember in Death and Dying Weeks where you decided you wouldn't let a child mourn a parent? I'm like, that's not what I said. But
so what we're saying here is that you are Lydia's father in Beetlejuice, the musical.
Yeah, just get on with it, move on. Crack on. So I think I am very practical with things, but then that means at other points it can suddenly hit me. I think that if I haven't kind of thought about it. And so I've had I haven't got any more grandparents alive now. And my godmother, who is my mum's best friend, died a few years ago. And her funeral hit me really hard. I was pregnant at the time as well, which didn't help with all the emotions. But she was someone who was just such a light and a joy and just a wonderful, wonderful person. And I remember really clearly in the first hymn that we started singing, we were talking about my Auntie Lisa and how wonderful she was as a person and all this stuff. And I had this really clear picture of her and God dancing in heaven. Like, that was just my image, that it was just, she was there with her Heavenly Father, and they were dancing in heaven. And I just went, I just started crying, and I thought, thank goodness they didn't ask me to do this funeral, because, because I think that was the first time I thought about my own grief, because I've been concerned for my mum and for my dad and for the members of her family and all this kind of stuff. Because I've been looking out for others that I kind of forgot, oh yeah, this was a person who was important to me too. And I think that's how grief can look for me. How about you, Ross?
Well, I've been listening and thinking about how I do respond to grief. And I've not had a lot of grief in my life, but right before the pandemic, my grandma died, and it was quite quick, quite rapid and unexpected. And I think I kind of went into pastoral mode for the rest of my family.
Because you're the vicar.
Because I'm the vicar. I did the funeral. There was the vicar of the church who was there as well. So I wasn't all on my own doing it. But I was the one who met with my mum and my aunt, and we talked about what the service would look like and, I kind of, again, similar to you, Ruthie, I think I kind of got on with it a bit. I appreciate rites of passage, so when there was another death in the family more recently, that was kind of within the extended family, I sort of got a glass of Prosecco and raised that with my friend at the bar, where we were watching Drag Race, I think, on, you know, on the big screen.
And it was what a combo.
I know, it was a weird, weird evening.
There's so many complicated emotions, isn't there, with death and grief? Because, you know, depending on the type of death, it can suddenly throw up things that you haven't necessarily experienced or that you have experienced, and it brings up those emotions again. So deaths in so many different forms can do that. And actually, you know, if it's a sudden death, that can do different things. Doesn't matter on the age in some ways, that actually a sudden death of someone who's quite old still is a big shock, in the same way that, you know, the sudden death of a child is a really difficult thing to deal with as well. And then there's deaths in all these different ways too, where actually, do you know what, sometimes there's relief in death. And if someone's gone through a long illness or dementia or something like that, and actually suddenly there's a weight off your shoulders when this closely related person to you perhaps it dies, and there's guilt then with that as well, that you feel relieved that someone's died. And it's all these complicated things, and the way that you experience one person's death doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, if someone else you know dies, you won't get emotional about that in a different way. It's all just so complicated, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, and then while that's happening, the rest of the world carries on.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what at least Lydia's experience in this musical, bringing it back to the musical, is about, is that she has had her whole world turned upside down and she's not coping. She wants the world to experience what she's experiencing. She wants it to reflect what she's experiencing. To use a little bit of academic English lit language, she wants pathetic fallacy. She wants rain. She wants rain and storm. And I think one of the lyrics is, you know, she wants the sun to have been turned out because it feels like her son's gone. S-U-N. And she says, you're invisible when you're sad. It feels like everyone's carrying on without you. She says grown-ups try to fix things for you, but when they can't, it just fills them with shame, so they walk away. And she just wants people to say her mum's name, because for her, her mum is still there. And then that's what we get in the next song, Dead Mum, saying, are you really in the ground? Because I feel you all around me. And I think there's something there about grief. I think in those first few weeks, in that first month, when you're planning a funeral, everyone gathers around you.
Yeah.
And, you know, people I visit talk about how actually they just want some peace from everyone calling and everyone giving their condolences. Then the funeral happens, and then suddenly it feels like everyone's gone.
Yeah.
And what I try to say to people, particularly when the way that someone is processing grief is through organisation and, you know, they're funneling all their energy into planning the funeral, into making all the arrangements, is I try to say to them, so who's going to be there for you after the funeral? You know, when the calm hits, you know, how are you going to be looked after? And I say, you know, often about 2 months, 6 months after the funeral, there's another wave when the grief hits in. Because I think grief comes in waves and it's unpredictable as well. We don't know how it's going to hit us because this is bringing me to my favourite quote about grief, if you can have a favourite quote. And it's from like a really obscure source. I tried to find the exact source. It's by someone called Jamie Anderson. And on the internet, people seem to think that's a Doctor Who writer, but with a bit of digging, it's not. It's just like a little Midwestern housekeeping blog. But this is what she says. Grief, I've learned, is really just love. It's all the love you want to give but cannot. All that unspent love gathers up in the corners of your eyes, a lump in your throat, and in the hollow part of your chest. Grief is just love with no place to go.
Aww.
Made me immediately think, Caitlin, of WandaVision. The Marvel show that came out right at the beginning of the pandemic, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to say I've used this in funerals around the time. Vision says to Wanda, what is grief if not love persevering?
WandaVision was another great show to talk about grief.
Yeah. And then there's another, I think, I can't remember where I came across it, but someone I read, I think, isn't it so wonderful that I've loved someone so much that it hurts this much now they're gone? Which, I'm sorry, I can't remember where that came from, who it was attributed to, I'm sure, but I'll find out later. So for me, there's something about the reason grief is different for every single person is because every single relationship we have is different.
Yeah.
And so the way that we love them, it then channels out into when they're gone and the object of our love is no longer right in front of us. What does that, the energy of that love look like? So I wonder if we go back to Beetlejuice the musical, Lydia is completely spiraling because her mum was her anchor and her stabilizing force. That was what the relationship was. Whereas perhaps her dad is just in kind of fixing things mode because maybe that was the role he had towards the end of his wife's life.
Yeah.
But it's hard to speculate. But you do, I think we see that. And I think we see that in our own encounters with grief and with people who are bereaved.
As the Vicar's Watch Dibley podcast, I'm suddenly aware of how the sitcom manages grief. Especially with the in-show death of Mrs. Cropley, but also in some of the specials later on, the in-show death of Alice because of the real-life death of Emma Chambers. I wondered whether either of you wanted to speak into that at all.
I think that it's, that they display two very different experiences, don't they? Because with Mrs. Cropley, the whole episode, that's the Easter Bunny episode, is people get to say goodbye to Mrs. Cropley, and everyone gathers around her bed and everyone has, you know, last words with her. And the joke is, of course, she gives them all instructions to pretend to be the Easter Bunny in secret and to carry on her legacy as the Easter Bunny of Dibley. And so in a way, there is closure in that episode. Whereas when we encounter Alice's death, it doesn't happen on screen, and it's, I think, don't we just pan to her memorial? Is that what
I don't
happens?
Remember.
No, it's they kind of show clips, don't they? Because it was in lockdown that they did the one with Alice, and it's Geraldine delivering a monologue, like a kind of weekly video for the parish, and says all these wonderful things about Alice, and the tears are running down Dawn French's face as she's saying it, and it is just it's just heartbreaking because it's not just a character at that point, is it? It's a friend as well, and they make jokes about Alice about when the test came back for cancer that it was positive. She was pleased because it was an important thing to be positive in life, and you're just like, oh my gosh, all of these things hit the feelings.
Yeah,
and it's a real bereavement. Whereas when Mrs. Cropley passed away, the actress at that point wasn't. She wasn't.
She wasn't dying.
Off,
no, she went on
because of the actress.
It's.
And so, what about us as vicars, in terms of managing and leading funerals, guiding other people through grief? What have been our experiences of that?
Yeah, I've been thinking with all of this a lot about a lady here who died out of the blue. We know she's not been feeling right. We told her to go to the doctor, but she hadn't. And there were just lots of things afterwards that it was a grief that hit me really quite hard, actually, because it was the first grief I had to explain to Ben as well.
Wow.
And so I had to explain to my three-year-old that his friend Pat wasn't going to be around anymore. And there were lots of little things that were happening at the time that I was like, oh, I wish I could have told Pat about this. And like, we just, it's really silly, but we just cleaned and tidied an entire room and it looked so much better. And I remember whilst tidying it, thinking, oh, I can't wait for Pat to see this because she'll love it and she'll be so pleased. And she never did. And then the day that it was announced, I was running had it happened that morning or was it the day after? I was running a Lent course in the evening, and so ended up doing a service beforehand for people to just have a chance to meet together and pray and give thanks for this wonderful woman. And that was weird for me in some ways as well, because I wasn't the vicar, but it was just... It was convenient timing in some ways, because I was the one leading something afterwards. It made sense for me to do something. And at this time, I think my partner was off with ill health anyway. So it's a hard one to do and deal with. And because there's a professional grief there, but there's a personal one as well.
Yeah.
But that depends on the person too. If it's someone from your congregation, you know, you might have quite a deep connected working relationship with them, or you might not. But actually, you know, some some funerals and some deaths are harder to deal with in church than others, aren't they?
I remember a conversation with a Congregationalist minister when I was in my curacy. And he asked me about the experience of doing a funeral for someone that I'd never met. Because within his particular tradition, you only ever really did the funerals of people within your own church family.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
And my response was, well, God still loves that person. And it's a real privilege and an honour to pray and for that person, even though I never knew them, but to love them as God loves them and to treat them with the dignity and respect that I believe Jesus would show them in death. And yeah, I mean, certainly in my funeral ministry in curacy, there were a lot of funerals for people that I never met, never knew. And I've had a lot fewer funerals, if that makes sense, here in Reading. But yeah, there is a real beauty to doing funerals for people that you never know, because God still loves them.
Yeah, and I feel like when I do a funeral for someone who I didn't know as well, especially, I mean, I've been now in my post for 2 years, so now I am getting funerals, I feel like I know the people I'm taking the funerals for. But really kind of still, I'm kind of up to that point, and still, when you take a funeral for someone you don't know, I feel like you get to know them in the process of preparing the funeral, and spending time with their loved ones. In talking about their life, especially if I've been the one who's been asked to prepare the eulogy, then you know, you do get to know them because you spend time with their family to work out what to say about them. And there's something about just spending time with the people who love the person who's passed away reveals quite a lot about that person's character. But then on the flip side, I've had now, it's been about a year really, of some really significant community deaths in our area. And it's been really emotionally draining for everyone. But we've had some really well-known people who've been seen as community linchpins, who are now, as one lovely lady I visit says, they've gone home to Jesus. God has called them home. And that is, the first funeral I took for someone I really felt that I knew was painful. And I don't think I, for some reason, I hadn't been expecting it to be, because I take a lot of funerals. But suddenly, in that church, before that service, I felt anxious in terms of how the service would go for the first time in a very long time. Because you want to do the person you know justice. You want to, the things you, you want to say things that truly reflect them. I think there's also a little bit of anxiety of, if I get this wrong, the whole community is going to be really annoyed at me.
There's something really interesting about the change of funeral ministry over the, say, last century or century and a half. Because I think in, and possibly because our mortality rate has gone up, as in we have less death because people are living longer. Because funerals are so much more personalized nowadays than they ever were. It used to be like the name of the person may not have even been mentioned, because it was just the priest would read straight out of the Book of Common Prayer funeral rite, but we've now got a much more personalized approach to funeral ministry, which is just an interesting observation, I think.
I think the tone has changed as well. Someone in one of my villages was saying to me after a funeral how they feel like back in the day, I'm doing that in quote marks, funerals were more doom and gloom and confronting those gathered there with their own mortality and saying, you've only got so much time left, look what happened to this chap, you know, tick tock, turn to Jesus, as it were. I made a joke out of that. Whereas now I think they're more personal, potentially more sensitive. I definitely speak more to grief in funerals than I do to the clock's ticking, as it were. In fact, I don't think I could ever bring myself to say in a funeral beyond the words which are already in the service of give us the wisdom to use the right time that is left for us here on earth. I don't think I could give a strong message that says, right, well, you know, we've all got to follow Jesus or that's it. Is that controversial?
I think I talk more about people's grief than I do. Mm. I often use that reading from scripture that you alluded to earlier, Caitlin, from Revelation. Mm. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, partly because I think it's a good one for giving hope, not only for us in our grief, but also alluding to a potential future beyond life for the person that we are grieving. I think it's countercultural to address grief, especially at the moment, where there tends to be, let's have a celebration of life, let's put the fun back in funeral. And actually, I think we use that as a way of avoiding the actual heartache of grief. And I think it's important for us as priests to be able to create a space where people can feel comfortable to cry, safe to grieve in a way that is honest for them.
I
in preparation for this, I just picked one of my books off my shelves. I think it was, can't remember which one it was, but it talked about, just flicking through, it talked about how the permanence of a stone building, the permanent where people come to worship, and the longevity of that place as a holy space, offers a security for people to grieve, because it's offering something physical and tangible, which can be a safe space. Which I thought that was a very interesting suggestion. I mean, even in funerals, I often use Psalm 23, as I previously mentioned, and I talk about how, you know, through grief's journey, we are not alone because we have God with us, guiding us, and we also have the rest of the flock traveling with us. And really, in all my funeral sermons, I say something along the lines of, support each other in your grief, channel the love that you have for your lost one into each other, and God is there holding us all together and will guide us all home. But more recently, I've been using 1 Corinthians 13 in funerals, which you'll recognise more as a wedding reading. Love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy. But I use it because it finishes with these words: these three things remain, faith, hope and love, and the greatest of all these is love. And I really like that, as in talking about the thing that endures from a person's life and into eternity is love. God's love. That's something I really like, as in, I think in kind of summing up how I understand what's happening in that moment of the funeral.
I think we've made an assumption here, though, about people being loved who we grieve. And that is not always the case when we do funerals, that actually, you know, sometimes, yes, there's grief there, but actually it can be a painful grief in a different way, because that person was difficult or challenging. And actually, there may even be times where there isn't grief in the same way. There is just relief, you know, that person has gone, and thank goodness, because they were... And holding that in a funeral.
And sometimes the family may not tell you those things.
Yeah.
Sometimes the family tell the priest all of the good things about a person, and kind of give you the edited highlights.
Mm. Oh, I had the opposite once. Yeah, wow. Yeah. So the family told me, oh, he was a bit of a so-and-so, was a bit difficult and all this kind of stuff. And so I'd written a kind of service preparing for this and thinking about, actually, there might be things that we need to forgive this person for doing. Mm. And then when I was at the church waiting for people to appear, all his mates appeared and was like, oh, he was just the best bloke. Can he do anything for anyone? And blah, 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 blah. Wow. And just thinking, okay, there's a very different picture here. Mm. And somehow I've got to marry the two. So yeah. Just went, if you'll just excuse me for a moment, ran into the vestry, which is the room where we just kind of get ready and everything. I was like quickly changing bits to do both. So yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah. Wow, well done.
It is interesting trying to marry together all those different possible experiences that might be in a room. I use a set of intercessions, prayers, from it's called the Alternative Pastoral Prayers book by Tess Ward. And I really like them because they say, the ones I've pieced together, I think I've also put in some of my own resources. So you start where we are with the hurts, with the joys, with the fears, something along those lines. And you carry all the questions without answers. And I try always to weave in that element of saying the person we've just spoken about in the tribute may not be, I don't say this explicitly, but that the person you've just heard about may not be the person that you recognise. So let's give some space to offer everything else up.
Yeah.
But it's really difficult to find the right language for this.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, as we talk about, you know, there are people who are not as loved by the people who are arranging their funeral. And there are people who do have caused intense hurt in their lives. And that at the same time, does anyone want a funeral to be the place where grievances are aired?
My father-in-law did one where they all applauded when the curtain went at the crematorium because they were all glad he was dead.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's a hard one because you want to honour this person before God, but also go in, this person was a piece of trash as well.
Yeah.
I guess that's different because there was a united front there. I mean, I've done other ones where it was two houses divided for funerals and trying to, honour those two different things was interesting, but it's going back to what we talked about at the beginning. Grief, the way that we deal with it is very different, and actually depending on your relationship to the person, it will be expressed in very different ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in summary, we started off with chatting about Lydia, who in her grief just wants to be she wants someone to say her name. She wants to be seen. She wants to be heard. But actually, as we've chatted, we've reflected on the fact that not everybody grieves the same way. They may need to be on their own. They may close in. They may get busy, or they may look after other people.
And there's a sort of a uniting factor of grief is a very difficult experience, but your grief reflects the relationship that you had with the person who is now gone, and that relationship in its disruption now bears out in different ways, and sometimes those are constructive ways. Sometimes those are very emotional ways, and sometimes as well, as Ruthie's talked about, actually, it feels like it's the,
Sometimes it's out and out destructive, and one of the things I often say at funerals is be kind to one another.
Yeah.
All of you are going to grieve differently, and sometimes they clash. Sometimes you rub up against each other in the wrong way, and
Yeah, and that's what we see in the Beetlejuice musical. We see two people who are grieving completely differently and the conflict that creates.
I have one Beetlejuice musical related question, which is a big spoiler for it.
Spoiler alert!
So Lydia at one point is going to marry Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Lydia's a teenager, right?
Yeah, so they address this in the show. Firstly, so this is taken... the source material, this happens as well. In the musical, firstly, Beetlejuice says, oh, it's just a green card thing. Because he initially says, I need to marry her. And then everyone on stage goes, but then actually in the song, they basically pause the song where they're talking about getting married. In the song, they then pause it and say, it's hard to believe some cultures think this kind of thing is all right. So they really shine a lamp on it. Actually, yeah. So, yeah. They know that it's a really...
That's, yeah. Good old 80s films.
if you investigate any of those particular Tim Burton films...
So creepy.
Things there which do not hold up.
No, very questionable relationships. But there we go.
Thank you for bringing Beetlejuice to us, Kate. It's been a really interesting discussion.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I hope, especially because it's spooky season, doing something a bit thematic.
And dear listeners, if you have found that you are someone who is grieving at the moment and need a place to put that grief, then this spooky season of Halloween... within the church is actually a really holy time of remembering those whom we have loved and lost, those who have died. Halloween is All Hallows' Eve, the day before All Saints' Day, and then after that, All Souls' Day. So you may want to get in touch with your local parish priest or find your local church and see if they're doing a service where those that you love and those who have died can be named out loud in a service. You can have their name said, which is all Lydia wants from Beetlejuice. And if that's what you need, then reach out to your local church.
And if you want a more lighthearted end to this episode, we just want to share with you one brief memory of when we were all at Theological College and realised that the 31st of October, which, yes, is All Hallows' Eve, is also Reformation Day. The anniversary of Martin Luther kickstarting the Reformation. So we had a party, not a Halloween party, but a Reformation party, where we all dressed up as our favourite reformers. So, why don't you let us know through socials, through the poll on Spotify, what reformer would you dress up as?
That's a very niche question.
I would have no idea.
No. Are you dressing up this Halloween?
I know somebody dressed up as Richard Hooker, with an emphasis on the hooker.
Was that you?
No, it wasn't me. I dressed up as a stained glass window with a smash sign.
Oh, yeah, you did. Although I wouldn't be surprised if you dressed up as Richard Hooker.
Well, maybe more nowadays, but not then. Cut that, please.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Vicar's Watch Dibley. Thank you to Toby for editing our ramblings.
Any opinions expressed are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Church of England or any other organisation with which we are affiliated.
If you like our podcast, leave us a review, follow us on social media and share it with your friends. And, as always, bless you for listening.
So I met a bloke the other day. And he had a crystal ball.
Ooh.
Yeah. He has to sit down very carefully.
Oh, wow.
Is that...
Okay.
Yeah.
We promised you it'd be a raunchy episode, everybody.